Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so that's what we talk about on this show. I share ideas and strategies. I talk about things that worked for me, but also those big epic fails that I've made along the way. And all because I believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And before we get started today, I want to tell you about something briefly. I've been working on updating a really cool project called Boost PBL. If you go to boostpbl.com, you will find that I have sprints, mini projects, and full-fledged projects. They are aligned to the standards. They make project-based learning more feasible and accessible. We have things for early elementary, we have things for upper elementary and middle school as well. And the goal is to make PBL feasible, to make it realistic, to make it something that you can start if you've never done it before. And our goal is to provide the lesson plans, the slideshows, the protocols, all the things you need out of the box so that you can customize it based on your knowledge of your students. And so go check it out. Again, it is boostpbl.com, and you will find all the information about it right there. And without further ado, let's dive into this week's topic. I love AI. I have written a book about it called AI Roadmap. I use AI for productivity on a regular basis. I use it to help schedule my week or to work as a thought partner as I'm trying to wrestle with ideas. I use it when I do research as an initial way to synthesize information. I love AI. And with AI becoming a helpful tool in education, it's very easy to see the benefits of quick access to information and personalized support and scaffolds that you can create, efficiency that technology brings. And we have talked about that on this podcast. How do we use these AI tools to help students with authentic learning? But I think it's important that as we embrace these tools, we want to preserve and nurture the learning experiences that AI doesn't fully replicate. Skills like embracing confusion or navigating boredom are all the things that we're going to talk about today. And in fact, I started out by saying I love AI. And so it might seem strange, like, why am I saying I love AI and then I'm being critical of it? Or I'm saying there are things that AI does poorly. And the answer is because actually loving something requires you to be critical of it. Institutions that you love, like your country, your school, whatever it may be, to love that thing doesn't mean you ignore its flaws. It means you recognize its flaws, you accentuate what works in it, and sometimes you work to make it better, right? That's part of what it means to love something. And the same thing is true of technology. Recognizing the flaws in technology and the issues with it doesn't mean that you don't love it. It just means that you love it enough to be critical when necessary and to think critically about it. And the other thing is, as much as I love AI and I love technology, I love humanity more. I truly believe to my core that human connection is the heart of innovation. And so we're going to talk about what that means and what that looks like. And the first idea before getting to these 9 different skills is, what is it that technology actually does? And one of the things that we notice is that technology can make the learning process more efficient. When I was in the 8th grade, I spent an entire year working on a multimedia project for the National History Day competition. And as a student, I treated learning like it was a commodity. My goal was to put in the bare minimum amount of effort to get the best possible grade. I was a decent test taker. I completed just enough worksheets to earn a B. I was always that kid that the teacher would say, you know, he's not quite working up to his potential. Like many students who had the gifted label, I equated success with speed and accuracy. I defined myself as being a good reader because I scored at the top of the class in reading fluency. I knew that to be a good reader was to be a fast reader with very few errors. So fast forward to this National History Day project, and my teacher, Mrs. Smoot, gives me this warning. She says, John, you're going to get frustrated. You're going to have to learn new skills and new things. You're going to have to problem solve challenges on your own. And then this is the piece that really stuck with me. She said, you're going to work harder than you've ever worked before. And you know what? She was right. At first, I hated it. I wanted instant answers. I wanted step-by-step directions. But slowly, as I realized that I had more time than I realized, that I had all the time in the world to work on this project, I began to embrace this longer, slower journey. I'm telling you, I fell in love with research. I read every book and article I could find about the integration of baseball, the story of Jackie Robinson, what were called at the time the Negro Leagues. I interviewed all of these former baseball players. I wrote out my script and I reworked it over and over and over again. And along the way, I realized that learning isn't only about speed and accuracy. It's about depth. It's about critical thinking and curiosity. It includes confusion and nuance and productive struggle and even boredom. As I look back on this project, I realized that the learning process was slow, but you know what? So was most of the technology. When I read articles, I had to get a ride to the Fresno State Library, go Bulldogs, find the information in a card catalog, visit with a librarian, and ultimately navigate the dark art of microfiche and microfilm. It was a whole thing back in the day. If I wanted a portable copy, it cost me money. And I had a limit on the number of books I could check out as well. And I'm telling you, I hit that limit on a regular basis. I spent hours in front of a typewriter, and I think it was probably the APA, maybe the MLA formatting book, to make sure that I didn't make a mistake on my expansive bibliography. Because if I did, I would have to retype the whole thing. I wrote out each draft of my script by hand. I used a camera and had to wait for optimal lighting to take photographs and then convert those photographs to slide by literally taking the film to Thrifty's, getting back my slides, and of course getting those amazing Thrifty's ice cream. If you ever lived in California, you'll know what I'm talking about, this cylinder ice cream. It was a thing. We went to a radio studio to record our scripts, and I edited it reel to reel using this tape with like scotch tape and razor blade, and that's how we made our cassette tapes with a master tape. I can now do all of these tasks quickly. I can create entire sketch videos. In fact, I just did today, made a sketch video by hand and edited it on Photoshop and iMovie. I make slideshows in a matter of minutes. I just did a professional development, conference session, two sessions for a local school district. And I just sat there and made all of my slideshows in about 30 minutes yesterday. I record podcasts like I am right now in my office. And I can add background music like I did in the intro on the fly. I can interview experts for free by asking them any questions. And I don't have to ask how long will it take, because back in the day, when I made that History Day presentation, I had to time the phone calls to see how much time the long distance phone call was taking up. It literally cost money per minute to make a phone call. If I think about research, I can research with Google Scholar and I don't have to mess with microfilm and microfiche, but I can also get summaries of articles in advance using a tool like Consensus. And I know in the past, Consensus has been a sponsor on the show. I should let you know that ahead of time, but I'm a huge fan of that as an AI tool. So in every way and shape, the process of doing a project like this is cheaper and faster than ever. But that leads to a question. Is efficiency always a good thing? As I think about AI, it's easy to see just how fast and efficient the learning process might become in the future. I mean, we're gonna have instant answers, targeted tutoring, quality feedback in a matter of seconds. I've already seen how students can use AI tools to fix audio issues or to create jump cuts for their videos. But there is a danger in using AI to do too much of the learning process. What can happen when we ask, you know, can technology do it faster, is we can slip into this thing where the speed of learning itself is moving quickly and we forget the value of slower learning. I've seen all kinds of technocrats talk about adaptive learning programs where kids get on-demand content that's given straight to them, and there's these digital worksheets and they sit in front of a computer and they just get the immediate information they need with immediate feedback. But I wonder if there's a cost to this fast style of learning. What happens when students don't engage in productive struggle? What happens when they work in isolation and they don't get a chance to collaborate? If we embrace this AI style learning, where it's just fueled by the AI, this adaptive learning model built on speed and accuracy, I worry that students might not develop some of the vital human skills that they're going to need in a world of smart machines. In other words, in a world of AI, we might need some of the things that AI does poorly, that humans do well, and that in many cases, AI can get in the way of. So what I'm saying here is this. Yes, let's integrate AI wisely. Let's embrace the power of AI, but also let's recognize that there are things that we don't want to lose as we integrate AI into the learning process. So let's talk about what that means. The following are 9 deeply human skills that have become vital in a world of machine learning. Note that this is not an exhaustive list. I'd love for you, if you check out the blog post that connects to it, leave some comments at the bottom of that article or that blog post and share some ideas of your own. Also, these aren't particularly groundbreaking. These are not new skills just because of AI. Schools have been engaged in these long, hard conversations for decades as they've created things like their graduate profiles and they've refined the profile of a graduate. They have, in many cases, talked about, you know, what are the skills that you need in an unpredictable world? And we used to call them 21st century skills or 21st century learning. I think at this point, we're a quarter of the way into the 21st century. Maybe we don't need to call it that anymore. But the point is, this is nothing new. But what I will say is this, as AI becomes more powerful and we look at the things that AI does well, these aspects become more important than ever. So let's talk about what they are. Number one, confusion as a catalyst for learning. Look, as a professor, I strive for clarity. I use visuals and tight organizational structures. I try to keep a consistent format. I'm a huge fan of what's called UX design, which focuses on reducing extraneous cognitive load and making courses easier to navigate. And yet, confusion often leads you to a place of nuanced understanding. It slows the learning process down in a way that leads to deeper, sustained focus, which is a part of what this series is all about. I'm doing this series right now called The Concentration Code. This is a podcast episode relating to it. Same idea. We need deeper sustained focus. Confusion can lead students to question assumptions, explore multiple solutions, develop a more resilient mindset. I would argue it leads to productive struggle, which we'll get to in a moment. So if we think about AI, a chatbot's instant answers might lead students to sidestep confusion rather than work their way through it. And this means that they might potentially miss out on deeper understanding that we need. On the other hand, we can leverage confusion through AI through things like slower, more methodical forms of prompt engineering, or moments where they ask questions and follow-up questions using it as an inquiry tool. So we can use AI in a way that embraces confusion rather than sidestepping confusion. Number two, productive struggle as a means to mastery. When I look back on that History Day project, I loved it. I learned so much at such a deep level. And yet, there were moments where I really hated the entire project. I remember at one moment I walked into class and I told my teacher, I have writer's block and I don't feel like writing. I think I'm just going to join your class instead. And she said, I think you're not. The nice thing about writing is that you can do it whether you feel like it or not. Writer's block is just a code word for fear. You write your way through your fear. And then she added, but I'll tell you what, just give me 200 mediocre words and we can revisit it. Now, what was happening here? What she was doing is she was giving me slack so I could develop grit. She was giving me the permission to make mistakes along the way, knowing that productive struggle would lead to creative breakthroughs. Productive struggle builds problem solving. It builds critical thinking, but also it's a critical part of a growth mindset. It leads to resilience. Struggle isn't bad if it leads to good outcomes. So that's number two, productive struggle. Number three, and I've already alluded to this, slower learning for lasting knowledge. As mentioned before, students can easily internalize the belief that speed and accuracy are the only routes to academic success. While fluency, whether it's reading fluency or computational fluency or creative fluency, are key, we need to know the value and the role of slow learning for depth and mastery. The slower, more reflective learning process helps students internalize and apply knowledge in complex ways. And in many cases, what it's doing is it's leading to recall and rehearsal. So from an information processing standpoint, it is leading to more stickiness in the learning. And I want to point out that this is where, in many cases, boredom can play a critical role. Being bored can lead to better idea generation. And so what you're saying is, I'm going to avoid stimulus right now. I'm not going to take too much time to talk about boredom. We're actually going to talk about this in a couple weeks. But boredom is a valuable way to lead to deeper learning. Number four, divergent thinking to move beyond the algorithm. Look, if you go to a chatbot and you ask it to create an image of a left-handed painter, what you're gonna get 9 times out of 10, in my own experience, has been tested as well, although the data varies, but most of the time, you're gonna get someone who is writing left-handed, or rather painting left-handed. And either way, you can do the same thing with throwing a football, hitting a baseball. It's gonna default to someone who's right-handed. And the reason why is because most of the data, in terms of the images that it generates, what it is essentially looking at, for lack of a better term, is someone who's right-handed. That's the inherent bias of AI. It defaults to the status quo because what it's using is predictive analytics. If you think about the way large language models work, it's very similar to autofill. And autofill will essentially guess what you're trying to do. Well, what it's doing is it's going based on what is most common. So the most common thing becomes the thing. You see it with, I created an image of a man and a woman on their wedding day. And, you know, she looks like an influencer. He looks like a property brother. And truly, every time you see it, what's happening is they're going to look white. He's going to look taller. They're going to look skinny. They're going to be heterosexual. You get the idea. It's going to default to whatever is the most common. And that's because the model of an LLM is convergent thinking. It's converging on the most likely thing. By contrast, divergent thinking says, what's different? What's original? How do we think outside the algorithm? How do we come up with something that is truly divergent? And the goal of divergent thinking is honestly, most of the time, something called functional novelty. So the goal is to come up with something useful, but something that is novel, something that is different. And as you do this, as you engage in divergent thinking, it'll lead to number five, which is developing your own voice in a predictive world. So I mentioned that AI is like vanilla. It's general, it's bland, it's cliche. What we can do is take the vanilla and make it our own. So the fifth idea is that students are going to have to find their voice. They're going to have to develop a unique voice, a unique perspective, a unique style. Number six is cultivating empathy for better creativity. There are a lot of what are called pro-social robots. They're machine learning tools that mimic empathy. But I would argue that's not empathy. We can anthropomorphize robots all we want, right? Wild Robot, WALL-E, they seem real, but a robot actually can't feel loneliness. It can't feel heartache. It can't weep with a close friend who gets that dreaded cancer diagnosis and feel that gut-wrenching reality in person. At the end of the day, the robot is still just a set of algorithms responding to predictive analytics. And so I would argue empathy becomes more and more important in a world of algorithms. And not only that, it's actually been shown to lead to better design. So empathy is often the starting place of design thinking. If you look at the Stanford D School model, for example, empathy is where you begin. Even if it's not the starting place, it's an embedded portion of design thinking. So the key idea that we want to go for here is the notion of cultivating empathy. Number seven is contextual understanding. Generative AI chatbots tend to struggle with context. And the reason why is that they're using data sets that are decontextualized. They're looking at massive amounts of data. What this means in a practical way is that AI can't read the room. Chatbots don't know what was just spoken by a group. They don't know the norms and mores of that local community. They don't know what little controversies are playing out locally. They don't have a handle on the in-the-moment issues facing people in their daily lives. And that's where contextual understanding becomes a critical skill for students to develop. There's a lot of ways to get there. We can do project-based learning. We can do empathy-driven design thinking, which fits back into that last idea, number six of empathy. We could do service learning activities. But we can also just rethink some of our writing prompts to incorporate the role of context, where we ask students to cite something that someone just said in the class, or to relate this to their local community or to their school, whatever that might be. The eighth idea is wisdom in a sea of information. Look, AI is great at giving information, and it's becoming better at creating more and more accurate information. But more information doesn't necessarily lead to better problem solving. That takes wisdom. And there's a lot of ways we can incorporate wisdom into what we do. Having students ask philosophical questions, having them ask what is best, letting them wrestle with the pros and cons of the tools themselves. So, you know, when should we use AI? When should we not use AI? And so this idea of wisdom is valuable and vital in a world of generative AI. And then finally, number nine, extended focus in a distracted world. Students will need to solve complex problems where the solution often leads to a new problem. And that requires extended focus. That's part of why we're doing this series on the concentration code. Focus is a critical skill that students will need in a distracted world. So what does it look like? Well, there's a lot of pedagogical frameworks we can use to get there. And it could be that we do inquiry-based learning. It could be project-based learning. It could be problem-based learning. But it could also just be taking traditional learning. There's nothing wrong with traditional learning. And asking, you know, how do we add context? How do we add divergent thinking? How do we stimulate curiosity here? How do we foster empathy? I recently led a workshop in New York. It was really fun and it was packed and it was this AI workshop. And one of my favorite activities that we did was redesigning writing prompts to focus on these different elements. And so we looked at all nine of these elements and we said, focus on some of these. It could be context, it could be empathy, it could be divergent thinking, whatever it may be, and rewrite your writing prompt to incorporate at least three of those different skills that we just mentioned. And what I loved about it is it wasn't making it AI proof, but it was making it AI resistant and, more importantly, human centered, which I think in the end is what this is really all about. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor if you enjoy this podcast? Will you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever it is that you get your podcasts? And maybe tell a friend about it. Just talking to other teachers about it is one of the best ways to spread the word. And if you haven't subscribed yet and you want to get this podcast, every episode, straight in your music player, just click the subscribe button as well. That would mean the world to me. Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something